We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
With the third pick in the 2020 NBA Draft, the Charlotte Hornets select LaMelo Ball from Chino Hills, California.
TJ, oh my goodness, stunning with the pass. Devontae deep. Oh my goodness, I don't believe it. A 30-foot and about the ground. Just stop it already.
All right, everyone, welcome to another Buzz Beat, a Charlotte Hornets podcast. This is Richie, and I'm joined by Lee and Brian today as we're recording this live on the Green Room app. Thanks to those that have joined here. And if you guys like to comment or request to speak, please feel free to do so here in the app. That's why we do it on this app, so that you guys can interact with us. Our goal is to get one speaker request, so hopefully we can get one of you guys either now or later in the pod to do that. Before we get into the episode, wanted to thank our newest members of BMC. You can visit buymeacoffee.com/buzzbeat to learn more about that and how you can donate to get access to some of the exclusive content. You can also just visit the BMC site for free content as well. And with not a subscription, I guess it's just a donation is what you want to call it. We do give shout outs to the people. So Reggie Helton, Kevin McChrystal, Dawson Hunt, Kane Rowell, and Hornets Beard Guy on Twitter are our like five latest supporters there. So also we're trying to do like a BMC exclusive mailbag episode. So if you're a member, check your emails for that request. Brian, Lee, how's everything going? Did you guys enjoy that ugly basketball game that just happened between the Kings and the Hornets?
Enjoy might be a little bit of an overstatement. I mean, I'm always happy to watch Summer League basketball, even when it's sloppy and strange. But I have to admit, in the first half, when I think we'd played 20 minutes and had 22 points, that was a bit of a slog. I can't lie to you.
Yeah, that was not the cleanest game. I'm with Lee. I'm up. I'm always here to see the Hornets play, and Summer League's still fun. I think even when it's like a certain kind of ugly, you can kind of lean into it. You know, you're not expecting, like a virtuoso performance from either of the teams, but that was pretty tough to watch at times, but even then you still have got, two lottery picks on the court at the same time. You've got three top 20 picks on the court at the same time. So, still worth diving into this game here. Even if it at times made us want to sort of divert our eyes from the screen while watching it.
If you see me eating popcorn here, guys, this is like my new favorite late night snack here. You're going to make fun of me, but it's skinny girl popcorn, so it's only 160 calories.
No, that stuff is so good, but it gets you if you eat, but Richie, if you eat like seven servings of it, defeats the skinny purpose of it, you know what I'm saying? Like, yes, it is a light cal snack until you eat like 3.5 standard deviations more, than you're supposed to eat.
That's how Richie keeps his sinewy frame.
Yeah, that's right.
And this is what's interesting. It's lime flavored. So that's I didn't think that would be good, but it kind of has like a margarita feel, but it kind of has that feel to it. So
I like that. Well, I think popcorn is like that's like a pretty like. I feel like there are a few notable basketball names that are really into popcorn. Isn't that a Steph Curry Steph Curry, Dell Curry, I believe, are big popcorn guys. Mike Young, the head coach at Virginia Tech, you can find him eating some popcorn on the sideline before every game. So, Richie, you're just fitting right in here.
Yeah, so if you guys hear me on this chewing, it's the popcorn. So before we get into the summer league, I do want to review the Kelly Oubre signing because, one, we didn't get a chance to do that as it kind of came out of nowhere, right? It didn't seem like we were linked to him at all. We did have, what, 13 and some change to spend, and he was a guy that, you know, fit that bill. But, you know, it did come out of nowhere, and it came immediately following the rumors surrounding Markkanen. So Kelly Oubre signed a two-year contract, $25 million. My immediate reaction to this was, from a numbers standpoint, he provides a ton of, like, wing and forward depth, especially when Gordon Hayward inevitably goes down. Like, I feel like that is going to happen this year. Knock on wood, maybe it won't. But as a player, he's going to put pressure on the rim as a cutter. He's going to get some points through the post-ups. He's going to get out in transition, which seems to be a theme with a lot of the acquisitions that the Hornets have done this year. And then defensively, he's going to be, I don't know, above average to good. I mean, he's a guy that can be used on primary guards and as a point of attack defender that Charlotte definitely needs. And then an added bonus, and I'm sure you guys saw this, but the contract details. Did you guys see that second year? Only $5 million of it was partially guaranteed.
It's like 40% of the contract is only guaranteed for the second year. It's a really tradable deal if it came down to it, which is something we can touch on a little bit too.
Yeah, I mean he's not a guy that I was necessarily pegging for Charlotte when free agency started, and he's not a guy that I thought would come here. But I think the system fit is really good for Oubre, and he could, his strengths could be highlighted by playing with LaMelo.
Yeah, I think a couple of things. I mean, it goes to this trend that we talked about last week on the pod, right? Like just one more athletic play finisher, wingy guy that can play a couple of positions because of the versatility of guys like Miles and PJ. And, you know, we'll see how much of a role Kai Jones has in Charlotte. But even Hayward, you can move him around at a few positions. Just a lot of guys at those hybrid forward, hybrid wing spots, all of whom, you know, you can think of as partnering with LaMelo in some way, shape, or form. Either guys running the wing in transition, guys working as cutters, guys cutting in scramble situations, guys who could work as screeners and pick and pop and slip guys and pick and roll lob guys. So, yeah, and Kelly Oubre, by the way, for whatever it's worth, is that I actually had a couple of really good games against the Hornets the last two seasons with both Phoenix and Golden State. Maybe that's a coincidence. Perhaps that's not. Richie, you mentioned an important part of the contract. I mean, I think Spencer said it this way on Twitter, but just like the market sort of shriveled up for Oubre a little bit. The Hornets were the last team or one of the last teams with space, and they were able to leverage that into getting only $5 million of that second year salary guaranteed. So even if this goes horribly wrong, right? Like even if this thing goes horribly wrong, that's a really easy contract to move. It's a good number. It's not long term. That second year, only $5 million is guaranteed. I mean, you could see that being Oubre potentially being moved at this trade deadline. Again, if it didn't work out, or next offseason, or before the next trade deadline, like they just now have a couple like sort of like medium salaries with Rozier and Oubre that are very tradable and really don't have much guaranteed money left beyond the end of this season. So I kind of think that would be a little interesting. Like if you ended up flipping Oubre down the road, well then you harvested your cap space into like more assets or whatever, which is something that would be, you know, a relatively, heady move on the front office's part. The one thought I do have about the fit, because we sort of touched on the things that we like about the fit. You know, it would have been, they're just, I do wonder if they've like overdone it a little bit in terms of play finishers, athletes, yep, track stars on the break. By the way, all of these guys can like handle and play make and shoot a little bit too. They're not clearly like one dimensional, but just, it would be nice to have, more of the guys that are sort of the ball mover, some ball mover types, some really like, you know, big time spot up shooters. So, you know, guys like Malik Monk, Devontae Graham, you know, I do think you miss the collective sort of like offensive half court understanding of some of those guys. And I think Devontae Malik is a very clever player, but I just think Devontae is sort of like, has a really good grip of where all their nine guys are on the court at the same time in relation to the ball. And so I don't know, there are pros and there's definitely some positives to the move, but I wasn't like head over heels with it. And I could see there's some scenarios where the fit like really doesn't go great, but it's pretty low risk. Like, you know, you can just move this contract or move on somehow.
From a fit standpoint, I think I'm pretty much in agreement with BG there. I mean, Oubre did not shoot the ball particularly well last year in Golden State. I think he's capable of shooting it better than he did. I think like mid-30s is a realistic hope. I don't know. I think like high 20s is also possible. Like there's kind of a variance of range there for Oubre in shooting. He does fly around. I mean, he'll fly in there and grab an offensive rebound. He's like a decent off-ball mover. I like your thought, Richie, about kind of like some wing depth insurance behind Hayward, who, you know, was like a fringe all-star guy last year, but, you know, the injury bug reared its head again towards the end of the year. You know, great points on the contract. I won't rehash that. If you kind of just look, I mean, I don't think this Oubre move is like a seismic needle mover by any means. But I do think now when you kind of take a step back and you're like, DG, Monk, Zeller, Biombo out, Oubre, Jones, Plumlee, Smith, Booknight in, like that mixed with player development, it's possible the Hornets got a little better on the margins. And they definitely got bigger and more athletic. Mm-hmm. It's certainly interesting. It certainly continues to play into the kind of the transition up tempo narrative that we spoke about last episode. So all in all, because of all the reasons y'all just broke down, I do like the move. But to reiterate my last point and BG's last point and something we talked about last episode, the playmaking load on LaMelo is still massive here. And again, he's fully capable, but it's going to be 82 games this year for LaMelo instead of 72. Obviously, he had an injury late in the season as well. So, like, there's just a lot on his shoulders from a creation standpoint. And it's going to be interesting to see, like, just how ready he is for all of that.
Yeah. And to Brian's point about, like, are we overdoing acquiring these players that are just, like, rim pressure cutters, like you also need the players that can get them the ball in those situations, because, you know, as we see tonight, obviously Summer League is a completely different thing, but the penetration was lacking, and you need players on the ball that can break down a defense, allowing those other defenders to kind of collapse and close in. And then you have Kai Jones, you know, Miles Bridges and Kelly Oubre cutting backdoor to get those open looks. We do have a question here. Is Oubre already the team's best perimeter defender? That's from Owen Watterson. I would lean
Jalen McDaniels.
Yeah, Jalen McDaniels is good.
I would lean Jalen, but Oubre helps there. Yeah, he does. So point. I mean, they don't really have any stoppers on the perimeter.
Cody, Jalen, and Oubre are probably the three that you would kind of, you know, couple together. I don't know if there's another one out there that you would consider with that bunch. And the funny thing is Cody Martin and Jalen McDaniels are both on non-guaranteed contracts, which is a topic of discussion for later on here.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
All right, let's get into the Summer League reactions here after two games. The Hornets are 0-2, so if you expected them to make the Summer League championship, that is pretty much out the window. They will get five games. They'll get two more games, plus they'll get a fifth game, which, like I said, won't be the championship game. So we're just going to, you know, not break down the game, you know, by quarters or anything like that, but let's just look at this through the first two games. Who has stood out? Who's been impressing? Who's not been impressing? I think it probably makes sense to start with the rookies and then go from there. There's a lot of comments here in Green Room about Riller and all that type of stuff, which we'll get to. I think the first person that I would like to start with is Book Knight. Good job of stringing together multiple dribble moves, getting his opponents on the heels. Some of these not only led to shots for him, but also led to shots for others. His hang time, his athleticism is on display. I think, Lee, you might have mentioned this either in a Slack channel or like a text, but you said that you were just a little bit worried about maybe him over-dribbling, which I would agree with. I would agree that that's not a habit that you would like to develop. But two things I would want to consider here. Number one, it's nice to know that he is a guy that can go get his own bucket. I think that's something that Hornets don't really have on this roster. Malik Monk showed that ability. Obviously, he's with the Lakers now. So I think that's one thing to consider. And then number two, we have to consider who he's playing with when he does play with the actual Charlotte Hornets, where there is more spacing, more ability around him. I think it wouldn't be something that you would give Book Knight the ball so often to just go pound the rock and just try to go get you a shot. He's the prominent guy here on the roster. But I would agree with you, Lee, in terms of him over dribbling. And we saw that tonight against Mitchell, you know, just being stonewalled and not getting any kind of penetration into the paint, especially early on in this game. It was tough to watch, but Book Knight has been impressive to me. I think his dribble moves have been something that we've all noticed from his UConn days, but he's also turning this into playmaking as well.
Yeah, so the context that you talked about in that, Richie, I think is super important. Like, Book Knight's got to be – he's got to kind of be thinking, like, what do I have to do to get, like, a secondary guy that can playmake a little bit? Because he didn't have that at UConn last year. And he certainly hasn't had it early in this summer league performance as well. So, look, the spacing's horrible. Obviously, the other team can completely kind of key on Book Knight. He's looking at like a wall of help most of the time, even when he is able to create a little bit. So I think all of that context is super fair. But I am seeing some of the concerns I have show up a little bit. Like, he is kind of a pounded out guy. 3 to 4 to 5 dribbles to look to create. And again, like, I don't think he's going to be asked to do that on the varsity team, if you want to put it that way, in the regular season. And then the question is going to become, can he become like a creative and cerebral off-ball cutter? Can he make open jump shots? He does shoot a little bit of a flat ball. I don't think it's anything that's unworkable or unfixable by any means. His mechanics are not broken. It's just a little bit of a flat shot. And particularly when he likes to get to the step back, like, your momentum's already going the opposite way. And shooting a flat ball in that situation is just not super efficient, I guess. So a couple things I'll say, though, like, in both of the second halves, he's been better than the first half, which gives me a little bit of encouragement on, like, kind of his, like, inner mindset of figuring things out against opposing defenses and adjusting in second halves as a young player and trying to figure some things out. Like, you saw late in the game, he had that awesome combo move against Mitchell finally to get free. you know, the hang, absorb contact finish, that was awesome. He's fantastic in transition. The half court creation is a bit of a slog for him right now, but when he's out in the open floor, he's got the in and out moves. He's got the crossovers. He's got the burst. He's also got a really nice kind of pause, hesitation, dribble and blow by. Yep. He's used that multiple times to free himself up. I hope like the jumper is going to have to be respectable for that move to keep working, but it's been awesome so far. So, you know, I'm kind of still like cautiously optimistic here. I think the context with in the regular season is going to be much more favorable for him, but I'm still a little bit wary of just kind of his pounded out creation right now, and that's where I see.
Yeah, you know, you guys mentioned a bunch of good points. His athleticism is so like sudden. It's sort of dormant, and then all of a sudden it pops, it snaps. You saw that at UConn. And I think you're seeing it with some of these sort of these hesitation, these in and outs, these like weave combo crossover moves that he's put together where left, right, lull the guy to sleep. And all of a sudden, boom, he's trying to get around him. You know, with all of these guys, and I don't even think Book Knight is necessarily like, at least at this point, we're even projecting him out to be like, a guy that's really going to handle the ball like a ton, at least early on. But you do want to see these guys like touch the paint. And I think we've seen enough of that where I'm not like, wow, he really can't like turn the corner. Can't get by anybody. Obviously Mitchell beat him up badly for like 95% of this game. Davion Mitchell was a fire hydrant at the point of attack. And Book Knight had, as Richie said earlier, a couple like sort of tough looking possessions where just, he couldn't get around. He tried to flail and get up a shot up before the shot clock ended. In a possession that went nowhere, and he really had no chance. Look, it's no surprise. Davion Mitchell is destined to look better at the jump than Book Knight. Probably he's 2 years older. He's coming to the NBA ready to roll, and he looked pretty good. I even thought Mitchell had some nice, nothing too advanced, but I thought he had some nice pick and roll possessions against Charlotte as well. What I would say, and this was mentioned during the broadcast, and you guys have touched on it a little bit here too. Obviously, in the regular season, just the talent around him is going to be better. You're going to have LaMelo. You're going to have Hayward. You're going to have Rozier and his gravity. You're going to have Miles Bridges and PJ Washington who offer, you know, shooting gravity, who offer some playmaking, who offer DHO partnership. And by the way, I think that's something, like, quick aside, I think against Sacramento, I think Book Knight missed Vernon Carey Jr., who did not play, as a guy in the middle that can give you a little bit of facilitation, can give you some handoff action. And I thought VCJ actually played pretty well against Portland and had some nice creations, some nice handoff possessions. I think that's something like Book Knight could use to get himself freed up. But with all of that, with all of the, yes, you know, his role will look different when the talent's there too. It's important to remember or to note, I should say, that it's summer league. When I say they're running, like, the Hornets are running, like, a base offense right now, I mean, it is, like, this is the most, like, stripped-down, parts-only version of James Borrego's system. I mean, they're running a little bit of horns with a couple different sets out of that. They're running a couple of – they're really not running all that much else. They've run a couple things to get Book Knight backdoor. They've run a couple, like, you know, bits of Chicago action for Book Knight. All that stuff's good. Like, that's the stuff that you want to, like, keep. That's going to be a part of, like, the regular season diet for James Book Knight, whether he's playing with the second unit or, you know, when he's, you know, up with the starters, assuming that, you know, he's going to be backing up Rozier at the two, most likely. But as I've written about at the Buy Me a Coffee site over the last week with a couple different posts, Charlotte has a lot of stuff. When you really, like, peel out and look through the 10,000-foot view of Charlotte's playbook, which is pretty diverse, it has a bunch of good stuff in it to feature off-ball movers and off-ball shooters, off-ball cutters. All the stuff they've used with Rozier, with Monk, with Graham to an extent. They're barely touching that, right? And so I think not only like in the regular season, because you'll have more talented guys around him, more talented passers, other, you know, usage wings and guards that are going to be taking touches and putting Book Knight into more of a secondary role, but also just like you're going to have different kinds of packages. And by the way, like I think Dutch Gailey has called some good after timeout stuff over these two games, but for the most part, like this is a pretty stripped down offense. And I think Booknight is one of those guys that has issues with processing and isn't just sort of like a, you know, a magnet for the rim with his dribble, mm-hmm. that you're going to have to scheme some of that stuff up. And that's just like not really available to them at the moment. And it may not be until like we get to preseason or the regular season where we start to see some of those packages and some of the, say, how Booknight's going to actually fit into Charlotte's base offense and sort of what they can build up off of that.
To kind of both of your points about Vernon Carey Jr., and you were talking, Lee, about the playmaking in transition. My favorite play from Booknight actually was in game one. I think it's on my Twitter. It was in transition. He hesitates. He goes between his legs, and he dumps it off to Carey Jr. for the bucket. Like, that's the type of stuff that I did not realize was in his game. I knew that he was athletic. I knew that he had dribble moves. But when you combine that at full speed when he did that, it kind of took me aback a little bit. Do we know why Vernon Carey Jr. didn't play tonight? Was it scheduled?
Maybe, because I saw they announced, like, Hornets PR announced that Scotty Lewis was not playing because of the ankle injury, right? But there was, unless I missed something, there was nothing on that for Vernon Carey. He was just on the bench in street clothes, right? So, correct. I think
there was there was some Twitter speculation, nothing but speculation, that maybe they were kind of like switching off Richards and Carey Jr., who knows?
That would make the most sense, honestly. Like, I mean, The thoughts it could be is like it's a small injury, nothing too serious. There's the like they're trying to get, you know, they're switching off between he and Richards. JT Thor was playing tonight, so maybe you loosen up a few more front court minutes because of that. They played Thor and Kai Jones together at like the 4 and 5 combo, which we can talk about if we want to. It was not all that pretty, but still kind of cool to see. And then, I had one other thought about Carey. But yeah, just basically, like, the one thought I did, once I saw him, because he was on the bench, right? Like, didn't we see him on the bench?
I heard that, yeah.
Yeah. So the scary thought I had for a second was, like, oh, is this, like, possibly COVID-related, right? Like, I hate that my head went to that. But then when I saw him on the bench, you're like, oh, no, that's not. Yeah. Clearly, this is scheduled, or he has, like, a minor injury, you know? And so if that's the case, that's fine.
Yeah, I think Dutch did mention before game one that he had planned on, or maybe it was after game one, I can't remember, that he planned on doing some of this stuff where they would alternate players or give players a break and just give them like a full game go. And I think the competition between Carey Jr. and Nick Richards is going to be an interesting one. Let's go to Kai Jones, the most exciting player on this Hornets roster when you watch him play. And if anyone in Green Room would like to speak about Kai Jones or Booknight, we would love a request. Athleticism, full display. Beating closeouts, full display. You know, in transition, it looks like sometimes he's going to barrel over someone, but somehow he is able to pull up and not get that charge. You know, we saw in game one that crazy dunk that he had. You can see why the Hornets drafted this guy, right? He fits within the system that we were just talking about pushing the pace, and it's going to be fun to actually watch him play with Melo, which he is not having the chance to do right now. He only gets to play with LiAngelo, so just a different ball, but not the one that we were hoping for. But kind of an underrated aspect of his game that I'm starting to pick up on is his offensive rebounding, right? Like one, obviously he's athletic, so he can get off the floor pretty quickly. But his arms, his length, he can just snag it out of nowhere, and he has the aggressiveness to go back up. Now, maybe it might get him into some trouble sometimes where he's just trying to get a bucket. We saw that in game one a lot where he would just put his head down and just try to, you know, nuzzle his way through his defenders and try to go up for a dunk or whatever.
He's just pivoting like on a 360 on the court, just like, please someone let me get up so I can get a crack at this here at the rim here.
And sometimes I felt like the refs were not calling 3 seconds because I felt like he was in there for 3 seconds before he would actually get up off the floor. But that is something that's going to be obviously a big benefit to him because he's a guy that is going to be learning a lot on both ends of the court. But if you can do the scrappy plays like offensive rebounding and just getting up off the floor with his athleticism, that's going to go a long way to keeping himself on the court. Lee, you've been very impressed with Kai Jones. Give me your thoughts on him through two games.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's two games of summer league, but I have come away from these two games more optimistic about Kai Jones actually potentially contributing in the rotation than I think I was after draft night, even though I'd been super high on Kai Jones throughout the draft process. It was just like always a very developmental pick for me. And that's still the case, But I think this kind of baseline floor that I was like pontificating about a little bit in the pre-draft process, where Kai Jones was kind of labeled as this like massive high risk, high reward pick. And that's true to a degree, but I think because of the points you just made, Richie, like the offensive rebounding, the rim protection, the defensive versatility, like, and then like just his energy and like, honestly, just like his just like give a damnness, you know, like he truly like gives max effort out there.
Is that a word?
I just made it up, but it's a word now. So I guess the point I'm trying to make here is like the qualities he's showing in summer league already is why I felt like there was a fairly reasonable floor for him as a rotation NBA player as he develops. And like the offensive rebounding has just been ridiculous. You said it, Richie, like he just kind of appears out of nowhere and just snares these balls out of the air. Yes, he needs to look to kick it out a little bit more when he grabs those, but he's also had a couple really nice like offensive rebound, quick bump, dunk finish too. The off the dribble closeout attack stuff has been super impressive. That was always the gravy on top. That was always the offensive flashes, the pull up jumpers, the jab step pull up. Like that was always the stuff that's tantalizing, but may or may not come. I think it's a little ahead of schedule. Again, with the context of like it's obviously we're pontificating on two summer league games here. I've been super impressed with Kai Jones. I also think, and last little point here is like the lateral defensive movement has been pretty good. There's still going to be nights where he's going to look completely lost. We have to be patient and expect that. Obviously tonight he was 1-for-5 from the field. But he did have 4 assists. I think the interior passing, the transition handle, the off the dribble closeout attack, and some of the like just hop step control stuff has been a bit better than I anticipated. So that's kind of where I'm at. I love Kai Jones.
Yeah, we talked about him pre-draft as this guy who's like a 6'10", 6'11 wing, right? Like how he moves laterally. And I actually thought, because his issues defensively really come with rotations and help responsibilities and that sort of stuff. But I thought tonight, you know, Charlotte switched a lot on ball screens. That was a nightmare for Nick Richards when he got matched up with Davion Mitchell. I thought for the most part, Kai Jones, two possessions did an okay job staying in front of Davion and contesting some pull up too. So I thought that was pretty good. And then by the way, on the flip side, on one of them, I thought he did a nice job after the miss, having that switch and just through his effort and his motor, getting down court, having the cross match and transition. I think that's that post up is the one that Mitchell got hurt on too. If I have that actually correct, but also earlier in the game too, he had a mismatch on Mitchell in the post that allowed him to snag an offensive rebound and go back up quickly for the dunk. That was pretty nice. The catch radius is great. The second jump is good. Well, you guys have touched on this already, but I just think his like nose for the ball is just better than I thought it was going to be. I like what he does, and he's sort of like with these sort of like scrambled chaos situations. Melo is obviously very, very good in those scenarios. I actually think Miles Bridges is as well, but as like a finisher. But LaMelo really is like a passer and like a grab the loose ball and immediately get it from A to B for a guy to finish. And I think Kai Jones could just run his way into some cheap points this year by just sort of like being kind of like knowing where to go and reading LaMelo in those situations, assuming he is some part of the rotation for a period of the season in Charlotte. I'm fascinated to see like what kind of role he'll have. The closeout attacking and dropout passes have been awesome. I mean, he's got that weird little like stutter rip or like kind of shot fake. Feels like no one should go for it, but they do, or Michael Beasley certainly went for it multiple times in the Portland game the other night. And he's so smooth at transitioning from that rip through move or that shot fake, get that swing the ball, get that inside leg through and then plant and go. And that he plays pretty heads up in those scenarios. The two other things I would say about Kai real quickly that I will be curious to see, and it's probably not going to be this season. You know, this is the sort of like offensive upside that Lee was just talking about that's like further down the road. But, you know, can he tighten that handle a little bit and use that not just to like avoid turnovers and the back taps and all that stuff, but just like can he tighten up that hand a little bit and get into a few more spaces because of it? Because like he can slink around, like he's got the know-how to want to like put it on the deck and transition or attack a closeout. Like, by the way, like a guy that you don't have to run plays for him to like perhaps like get downhill and get to the rim. I like that too. But just can he get into a few more things? Richie, you said he has some of these possessions where it looks like he's just going to bulldoze in people. You'll see him. He'll try like a little like D-Wade, like Euro step, like pick the ball up and have that go loop it over the top of the defense or the defender. But if he could just do certain stuff where he could get skinny, get a little bit lower and get in some more of these gaps. Yeah, I just think like a wealth of opportunities for finishing would open up for him. Cause like once he gets to a certain spot, he can just uncoil and use his length to finish. But it's like, you know, almost that ability to separate in the mid post, I thought looked really good against Portland. When he has guys on his hip or they're level with him, he can really use that stride length to get around them. But if there's a bit of a wall, there's like, you know, a defender in front of him plus a help guy that's sort of in lane two, like it's tough for him to like split those dudes. Right. And so just that's not even this season. I'm talking about like, we're looking like a year or two down the road with Kai, but something to keep an eye on with him.
And to Lee's point about some of the passing, interior passing, and couple that with the fact that he can beat a closeout, I think it happened more in game one, and maybe it happened in game two as well, but he had several times where he was beating a closeout and a big man would step up and he would just dump it down to the big right beside him, you know, going full speed, avoiding that charge. So sometimes, like I say, it looks like he's going to run someone over, but for whatever reason, he is able to stop on a dime and make that pass. Not sure if any of our listeners, know this trio. And Lee, I don't know if you're too young for this, but do you guys remember the high voltage trio of Baron Davis, Ricky Davis, and Eddie Robinson together for the Hornets in the late 90s?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Do I?
Okay. I guess what I'm getting at,
E-Rob.
I feel like I'm getting those vibes with this team, and I think Kai Jones just fits right in with that. Him, Miles, LaMelo, you know, those players are going to bring some exciting highlights night in and night out. If there's not wins, at least you're going to get some excitement there. Okay, we have a question here in the discussion on Green Room app.
Last thing I want to say about Kai Jones, I want him to watch Pascal Siakam tape. That's the other thought I have now, too. I'd like him to watch some Siakam tape. But let's get to the question from Green Room now.
Yeah, so it's I don't know if it's a serious question, but Ryan asked, over or under 5.5 games in Greensboro for Kai Jones this year? 5.5.
Over. I'll take the over on that one. Yeah, I'll take the over. On 5.5?
Well, we originally set it at 10.5, and then we were kind of discussing in the green room, and we narrowed it down to 5.5. We don't even know how long a G League season is, so that was part of the issue.
I'll take the over on that.
Okay. I'll go under to be different, only because maybe he can learn some by playing short stints here and there, and maybe the big league team will want to keep him up. So I'll just be different and say under. Lee, any thoughts now?
Yeah, I think under two. I'm kind of starting to think that maybe Kai Jones, maybe he's not an everyday rotation guy for this team in his first year, but I'm starting to think he might be with the big crew all year potentially.
Okay.
Not to say that some time in Greensboro wouldn't be good for him, because I think he would.
Yeah, he could also be one of those guys where like the first 6 minutes of the game or whatever, just a slog. You know, it's the second half of a back to back. Everyone's tired. No one's in sync. You know, no one's getting back on defense. And Brego says, "Bleep this, Kai. You know, get in there and just start." You know, running around doing stuff. Just give us someone with some energy. So I could see him being just sort of like a bit of a voltage for this team over the course of a long season too. But I'll still take – I just think it's going to be – I think it's important for JT Thor is certainly a two. I mean, like, I think he's obviously going to play a lot in Greensboro, and I don't think Kai will be there quite to that extent. But I do think I'll take the over there.
All right, we have two more topics to get to, but let's just wrap up with any other thoughts that you have with Summer League. We're not going to break down every individual player here. The last thing I'll say before we move on to the next topic is I'm very interested to see the competition between DJ Carton and Grant Riller. Currently speaking, I think Carton is is outplaying Riller, and Riller has been on the podcast before, so we are partial to him a little bit, but I did not know that DJ Carton 1 was born in Pineville, North Carolina, which is great, which is basically just a suburb of Charlotte. He's a guy that can obviously get on a poster, can dunk on anyone, really, but what I'm seeing the most from him, he's out there competing. He's trying to impress. Defensively, I think that he's very active on that end. Active hands, moving his feet. This is the type of stuff that you would like to see out of a guy that's competing for a spot. I think he's on an exhibit 10 right now. So he'll have to work on his outside shot, but I think he's outplaying Grant Riller right now.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's been a tough go for Riller. He was, what, 1 for 9 shooting tonight? Yeah, it was not a great couple turnovers, no free throw attempts, no 3-point attempts. I mentioned this a second ago, but you know, they're running such a simplified offense right now. You really need some guys that can just spread it out, pick and roll, RISO, and get north south. And you know, ideally you'd kind of like that for that to be, I think, Grant Riller. And he definitely like is touching the paint some. It's not like he can't turn the corner, but then he gets into the lane and it's just like the collective length of NBA front courts, I think, is really bothering him. He was a really well-rounded, awesome, big time offensive player at Charleston, but his bread and butter was, and he could do a little bit of everything, and he played without the ball and he played with the ball, like all this stuff. And you know, you could run him off screens and stuff too, but his main thing was like he got downhill, he got to the rim, he slashed. And I just think the NBA is, you know, more athletic, longer, and I think it's given him a little bit of trouble here. But I'm pulling for him. I mean, I liked Riller as a prospect. I really did buy him even before he came on the pod. So, but this summer league has not been inspiring too much confidence here.
Yeah, my very last summer league thoughts here. I thought it was Kolbaka, but they were pronouncing it Kilbaka tonight.
I think they were wrong.
They
changed it during the game, did they not? I thought they started out with one thing, and then at halftime they were like, "Wait, what? How should we say it?" And I thought they moved to a different name.
I think I'm just going to go either Arnie or AK.
Arnie.
I think that's the safe. He's 4 for 10 from three. Beautiful mechanical jump shot. Some really bad defensive moments. Metu just like completely blew by him a couple times.
Yeah.
He bounced off a few guys defensively. But like, I think he's a guy who can play in Greensboro and do all right. Like I've actually been a little pleasantly surprised with him, although he's still got some major holes in his development. I think Nick Richards has been decent. He's dropped a few passes. He had a frustration foul in game one and like didn't run back on defense one time, which I just gets under my skin. But like, he's been a good dunker spot finisher. He's certainly blocked some shots in rim protect. He's run the floor. I think he's been okay. Nothing that's right. Blown me away, but like solid. Yeah. I hope we hold on to him and continue to kind of develop him a little bit. I'm sure he'll be in Greensboro a ton again this year as well.
I wish he got off the floor like 10% faster. I just like wish he was a little bit quicker with some of that stuff. Cause like the length and like the body is there. It's just, I don't know. I feel like he's just slow and moving feels like he should be a little bit more bouncy, I guess. But he did. But you mentioned like he has the ability to get up and block a shot. He had a couple of nice ones tonight against Sacramento.
For a second there, I thought you were talking about get off the floor. Like, hey, you sub out, get off the floor a little bit quicker.
No. I'm sure there are some Hornets fans who were thinking that though too.
Okay. Two topics here. The second to last topic here, in terms of the final 15-man roster, if you look at the roster right now, I think there are 16 players with NBA contracts. Two of those are on non-guaranteed with Jalen McDaniels and Cody Martin. And then we also picked up a one-do recently. You have the battle between Carey Jr. and Nick Richards, who both make about $1.5 million. They are on guaranteed contracts, so if you were to waive either of those players, you're eating that money. My question to you is this. If they're going to get down to 15, which they have to do by the beginning of the season, who is that player that they are going to get rid of? It might make sense just to go the non-guaranteed route with either Cody Martin or Jalen McDaniels, but I'm almost thinking that whoever wins the battle between Carey Jr. and Nick Richards, the other is gone. And I know that's kind of weird to say after we just spent last year drafting both of those guys in the second round. It felt like they were really wanting both of those guys and they couldn't really make a decision. But if you look at our big situation here with Plumlee and Washington and Kai Jones, it just feels like you can't have five bigs on your roster and get significant play time. So maybe that's the wrong way to think about it because you will have to eat that money. But any thoughts on who is the odd man out here?
Yeah, I think it's hard because it's like, first off, I think you have to ask yourself, Richie, you mentioned this, like, would they actually get rid of a non-guaranteed salary? Like, is the and you have to eat that money if you got rid of someone like Nick Richards. You know, it's hard for me to, I think they would do that, but I don't know. Maybe they wouldn't do that. They could pinch a few pennies here, just rounding out the roster with literally the 15th guy. I'll say this. It is really hard for me to see a scenario where you can justify getting rid of McDaniels. I just think he was good for them this past season. He is a defender. And he takes really nothing away from you offensively. We talked about this on the last pod, but like he does a nice job playing that fifth role on offense where he'll stand in the corner, he'll cut along the baseline, he'll be in the dunker spot, he can pass, he can attack a closeout. He doesn't need the basketball, but he can do things to keep help defenders honest or punish them when they're not. And then defensively, he can be good at the point of attack. He's got length. We've seen him as in terms of his event creation as a guy that can be a help defender and be disruptive in passing lanes or at the rim. I just think if you're going for it, you should have a guy like this. I think he has the chance to be there to be like their best perimeter defender. At the same point in time, he's not like a complete negative offensively where someone like Cody Martin might be. So, I don't know. If I had to say like who's not making it, I would say Cody. But I don't know. I just don't think you can get rid of. McDaniel. So of this group, assuming you're keeping a Wandu, you've got what, two spots for Richards? You got two spots for Richards, McDaniels, and Cody Martin. I'm saying they should keep Vernon Carey. I don't even think he should be on the chopping block for this. I actually think he can help this team as well this year. I think he should be in the center rotation with like Plumlee and PJ. So, I'll say, unfortunately, Cody Martin is the last guy cut. Would be my thought because I just don't think you can do it with McDaniels.
Yeah, I'm actually with you, BG, and it's not an easy decision. I really wish they could hold on to all these guys. I assume that a Wandu is going to stick around since they just acquired him.
I guess I don't know. That was weird, but I guess he is likely to be a part, but it feels random. It really does.
It does, and honestly, there is some redundancy there with him and Cody Martin. Not carbon copies of each other by any means, but similar profiles. Well,
the carbon copy would be Caleb Martin, by the way.
So. Who we did wave.
We're no longer fully Martinized. We're only partially Martinized, and we may not be Martinized at all in a matter of weeks here.
And you guys know I've been a Richards stan. So I'm with you, BG. I don't want Vernon Carey Jr. to get cut either. And Richie, you made a fair point. Like, do we really need all these centers? But at the same time, like, I still think both of those guys might eventually be like rotation bigs, even if it means, you know, maybe moving one of them at some point if you don't want to keep them both. But I'd like to keep them both on the roster. So I'll reluctantly go with Cody Martin as well for very similar reasons that Brian just laid out.
I just have a weird feeling it's going to either be Richards or Carey Jr. I know you're going to eat the money.
It's reasonable. It's totally reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, if that's the case too, like, then for me, it's Richards, and you have to keep Carey, who you just use the third. I mean, I know it's sunk cost and stuff, but like, and hell, you burned a second round pick to get back into the draft to draft Nick Richards. All that's a sunk cost. I would rather have Carey. I like him more as a prospect. He's younger too. So there's that as well. But yeah, for me, I would come between Richards and Martin. And then I just look at which one has the guaranteed salary. So it's like, who do I think they're more likely to cut? Is the one that they don't have to then pay afterwards. So that's my thought process.
I didn't reiterate, but I should have. Like, it can't be McDaniels. McDaniels needs to stay on this roster.
Yeah, he can absolutely help. I could even see a scenario where, like, yeah, I mean, he's absolutely in the rotation and a guy that's like, you know, just in the slog of a season, you're gonna need him. And I just like what they can do defensively, being able to switch him around when they play those front courts with PJ and Miles, or at this point, you know, the Oubre or whatever, just but being able to switch around and switch guys out and all that sort of jazz. Like, yeah, I think McDaniels is really important for that.
All right, last topic here, and we'll make this quick. James Borrego officially announced today by the Hornets that he signed a multi-year extension. I think I know how BG feels about JB. I think we've talked about Borrego a lot here on BuzzBeat, but Lee, what are your thoughts on Borrego in general as a coach, and but also what do you think about this move to extend him?
Yeah, I mean, I've been super vocally supportive of James Borrego. In my opinion, this was the only course of action. I know there's like this contingency of Hornets Twitter that does not like James Borrego, and I enjoy trolling them from time to time. And I've always kind of framed this conversation by saying, like, look, we don't know what James Borrego is or will be as a playoff coach. And it's fair to say we can wait and see how that looks when the time comes, hopefully sooner rather than later. But as a developmental coach, he's been fantastic. I think he's been pretty darn good as an in-game coach as well. We've talked about kind of like his after timeout play calling and stuff like that. BG's laid out like his kind of robust playbook for all the different like actions he's got to get the ball in successful places for this team. And look, he's like, he's overperformed expectations pretty much in every season. Like, even if you look at the over under win totals in the preseason that Vegas puts out, the Hornets have hit the over, I think, in the last three seasons, every year that JB's been here. So I've always been a huge proponent of JB. I think this was fantastically well done by Hornets brass, and I hope he's here for a long time, and I hope he can become kind of that, you know, seasoned playoff coach as well, which we'll see.
Yeah, I'm happy for JB. It makes sense on a bunch of different levels. I really like his playbook. I like him as an offensive mind. I like him as an after timeout coach. I like his staff. And, you know, probably, I don't know if this is most importantly, but this is somewhere at or near the top of the list. But it does seem like he and LaMelo Ball have a pretty good relationship, too. And for the foreseeable future, as we have discussed, they're molding this franchise around LaMelo as they should too. And I don't think they go to LaMelo Ball and say at age 19, like, hey, should we do this? You know, maybe they do. I don't think so. I doubt at this point. I don't think he's to that level yet. But yeah, those guys seem to have a relationship. They've been sitting courtside together at Summer League for these first two games. So it makes a lot of sense. And yeah, we'll just see. Like, now becomes the hard part, because I don't think they're to the point where they have expectations yet. And there is some sort of simple beauty of getting to coach the fun team with all the cool offensive sets, you know, without expectations. So we'll just see, because I don't think we're to that point yet. So for now, I think it's fine to let this keep marinating. And yeah, like, you know, Lee, you're right. There are, and by the way, like, in this contingent of like Hornets Twitter that doesn't like James Borrego, there are some really, really smart basketball minds that, like, you know, like some of these people know a lot about the team and a lot about hoops, But yeah, some of them are just adamant that that Borrego is not quite up to snuff on a couple of different things, usually dealing with the rotations. But I like Borrego. And I just think he's important. I mean, like, to an extent, like, he broke a barrier down when he got hired for the job. That's cool. But yeah, so no, I'm hopeful that we'll get to see him coach postseason basketball at some point in Charlotte sooner rather than later.
All right, I won't give my thoughts because I think if you guys have heard the podcast, you know how I feel about JB. But we wanted to thank everyone for joining. Sean, Patrick, Owen, Jeremy, Taylor, everyone listening right now. A little disappointed that we did not get a speaker request. We're going to get it one day. Even if it's just a question. If you guys are listening for the first time, we would love for you guys to take out 30 seconds of your day and just give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. That would mean a lot to us. For BG, for Lee, I'm Richie. We'll see you guys next time.